recording. We're back and we're so happy about it.
It's been a hot minute.
Yes.
A hot, hot minute.
Yes. And it's about to be another break. Oh my gosh. Yes, we are going to take another break for the Christmas season. And so we'll be seeing you all in the new year after next week. But I guess before we get started, let's do our intro. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Curse Cafe podcast. I'm V.
And I'm Burr.
And we're your speculative host for all things weird, paranormal, and true crime. And today we're going to be doing a story reading that's based on the show Factor Fiction. And I don't know, Amber, did you ever watch that show?
Is that one with Riker?
Yes. I was going to say, if you don't know it, it has the guy from Star Trek The Next Generation in it. It basically, how the show goes is he reads off three stories and does not tell you whether they're true or fake until the very end. And so as you're listening to these stories, you decide if you think they're true or fake, and then you see how many you got right or wrong at the end of the show. And so we're going to be doing something similar. We're going to be reading off stories. We're going to take turns reading stories that we've found that are either true or fake. And we want you all in your head to think about which ones you think are true, which ones you think are fake. And then at the end, we will reveal what was what. We do have a disclaimer for you all. Our stories will include some pretty graphic retellings of murder, suicide, death, violence, all the things that come with that. And so if you are opposed to that, please join us on our next episode. Thank you. So let's go on and get started. I'm so excited. It's so much fun. So I have a story and it's called The Lawson Family Tragedy. It was a cold Christmas Day in 1929 in Germantown, North Carolina, a farming community near Danbury. But our story begins weeks earlier when Charlie Lawson loaded his wife Fanny and their seven children into his truck for a drive to Winston-Salem, about 13 miles away. He bought them all new clothes, a spending spree that was unusual for the Lawson family. Charlie instructed his family to remain in their new clothing for a trip to a local photography studio where he had them sit for a family portrait. It was, he said, part of a Christmas surprise. Charlie and Fanny Lawson married in 1911 and had eight children, though one died of pneumonia at the age of six. Charlie moved his family to Germantown area in 1918 and began sharecropping tobacco. By 1927, the Lawsons had saved enough money to buy a farm on Brook Cove Road. In the evenings, Charlie, Fanny, Arthur, and Marie would work together renovating the farmhouse while removing rotten timbers. Charlie accidentally hit himself in the forehead with an axe, which sounds
horrifying.
Yeah, I'm imagining, I guess, on the upswing. Pegged himself with an axe.
Like, I've heard of people shooting a rifle and hitting themselves in the face, but
yep,
never an axe. But okay.
That kickback, that axe kickback. After the accident, neighbors and family members noticed a change in his personality. As Christmas Day dawned in 1929, Marie awoke early to blend butter, sugar, and egg whites, roll a cup of raisins and flour, and pour the mixture into two circular pans. Her signature dessert would be ice decorated and ready for the holiday feast. While the cake was cooling, Charlie, Arthur, and Charlie's two beagles set out on a hunting expedition. They ran out of ammunition, so Charlie sent his son to Germantown to buy more. Back at the Lawson farm, Marie was finishing up in the kitchen. Her two younger sisters, Carrie and Maybelle, decided to visit an aunt and uncle nearby. What neither Marie nor her mother knew was that Charlie was waiting by the barn. He shot his daughters, and to make sure they were dead, bludgeoned them with a hoe handle. Charlie returned to the house and shot his wife, who was peeling tomatoes on the porch. Shoving more shells into his shotgun, he swung open the front door and pulled the trigger, striking Mary, who slumped to the floor in front of the fireplace. Reloading, he shot James 2 and Raymond 4, then without the slightest hesitation, bludgeoned 4-month-old Mary Lou to death. Charlie escaped into the nearby woods, and just before sunset, a shot rang out, signaling his suicide. The echoes of the gunfire had barely faded into the mournful howls of Lawson's two beagles, who led searchers to his body. Police found letters to his parents, and on a crumpled scrap of paper, "Blame nobody but I." The entire family was buried in a single plot. The killing attracted so much attention that an estimated 1,500 curiosity seekers attended the funeral. The reason for this horrific massacre is a subject of debate even today. The mention of a Christmas surprise led some to believe Charlie's act was premeditated. Others blame Charlie's head injury. However, an autopsy and analysis of his brain at Johns Hopkins Hospital found no abnormalities. Many other rumors circulated around the question of why Charlie would kill his family, including speculation that the sharecropper had witnessed an organized crime incident and that he and his family were murdered to silence them. It was not until 1990 when the book White Christmas, Bloody Christmas was published that a claim of the incestuous relationship between Charlie and Marie surfaced. According to the story, Stella Lawson, a relative who had been interviewed for the book, called the author and said that she had overheard Fanny's sisters-in-law and aunts, including Stella's mother, Jetty Lawson, discussing how Fanny had confided in them that she was concerned about an incestuous relationship between Charlie and Marie. Jetty Lawson had passed away in early 1928, meaning Fanny had been suspicious of the incest at least a year before the murders took place. More support for this theory was revealed in The Meaning of Our Tears, published by the same author in 2006. A close friend of Marie Lawson's, Ella May, disclosed that a few weeks before Christmas, Marie told her she was pregnant with her father's baby and that Charlie and Fanny knew about it. Strange stories of premonitions, curses, and ghosts were rampant in the Germantown area, especially after Arthur died in his early 30s in a freak truck accident. In time, the Lawson cabin was demolished and interest in the tragedy waned. So that is my first story. Whether it is true or fake, we'll find out at the end.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's absolutely it's terrifying.
That you like want to be fake, but we'll see.
Okay. So my story is not as long. Like I thought it was going to be long, but maybe the explanation will make a little bit more sense when we get to that point. So in 2008, a large family, which included two elderly parents, their 5 grown children, and numerous grandchildren, gathered for a Christmas Eve celebration. They spent the entire day bonding over food, games, and gifts, as many families do during the holidays. As the evening was winding down, most of the parents were in the front of the house playing cards, and the children were towards the back of the house still playing with their new gifts. Just before midnight, the doorbell rings, and one of the 8-year-old girls rushes over to the door and flings it open, only to find Santa standing in the doorway holding a gift. Seemingly, before she has time to react to the curious figure before her, Santa pulls out a handgun and shoots her in the face. He proceeds to walk through the house, taking shots at anyone that comes into his path. Following the shooting rampage, he then opens a gift that he had brought with him, a flamethrower. Santa sets everything ablaze before fleeing into the night. So the question is this fact or fiction? And we will find out when we get towards the end.
Oh my gosh. Santa brings out a flamethrower. I'm like, who has flamethrowers anyway?
Elon Musk.
Oh my gosh.
The worst Santa, the best Santa. Who knows?
That is crazy. Okay. So my last story in fact or fiction is called The Lodge. This story is about a soon-to-be stepmother who, alone with her fiancé's 2 children, becomes stranded at their rural lodge during Christmas. There, she and the children experience a number of unexplained events that seem connected to her past. Laura Hall commits suicide after her estranged husband, Richard, informs her that he plans to marry Grace Marshall, a woman that he met while researching a book about an extremist Christian cult. Raised in the cult, Grace was the sole survivor of their mass suicide led by her father. Laura's death devastates her and Richard's children, teenage Aiden and young Mia. 6 months later, Richard announces that they will spend Christmas with Grace at the family's remote Massachusetts lodge to get to know each other. Aiden and Mia uncover Grace's past, including video footage of the cult showing the deceased followers draped in purple silk with duct tape across their mouth reading sin. At the lodge, the children act hostile towards Grace and refuse efforts to bond with her, even after Richard departs back to the city for a work obligation. Grace's unease is compounded by the abundance of Catholic iconography in the cabin, which causes her to have nightmares about her father. After being rebuked for watching her in the shower, Aiden prepares Grace a cup of hot chocolate, which is very important later on. In the morning, Grace awakens to discover that her belongings, including her clothing, psychiatric medication, and pet dog, are missing, as well as all the food and Christmas decorations. The generator has gone out, leaving all their cell phones dead. Grace suspects the children have pranked her, but finds their belongings missing as well. She notices the clocks have advanced to January 9th. Aiden tells Grace he dreamed the gas heater malfunctioned and they all suffocated, expresses fear that they may be in the afterlife. Over the next several days, Grace succumbs to anxiety, medication withdrawal, hunger, and cold. She begins sleepwalking and is tormented by disturbing visions and dreams, including the recurrent voice of her father sermonizing. She attempts to walk to the nearest town, discovering a cross-shaped cabin where she sees her father beckoning to her. She eventually travels in a circle, taking her back to the lodge. Buried in the snow, she discovers a photo of Aiden and Mia in a memorial frame, and inside finds the children praying over a newspaper article detailing the deaths of all three from carbon monoxide poisoning on December 22, 2019. Aiden insists they are in purgatory and hangs himself in the attic as proof that they're dead, only to inexplicably survive. Grace suffers a nervous breakdown, which intensifies when she finds her dog frozen to death outside. She enters a catatonic state on the porch. Worried that she might die of exposure, the children finally admit that they have been gaslighting her the entire time. Having drugged her, hidden their possessions in a crawl space, faked the hanging, and played recordings of her father's sermons via a wireless speaker. With their own phones dead at last, the children unsuccessfully attempt to start the generator and bring Grace her medication, but find her convinced that they're in purgatory and must do penance to ascend to heaven to be accepted by the almighty angels. That night, the children witness Grace self-flagellating by burning herself on the hearth. They hide in the attic, but Grace confronts them in the morning, insisting they must sacrifice something for the Lord. Richard returns to discover an inconsolable Grace brandishing his pistol. In an attempt to prove her belief that they're in purgatory, she fires a gun at him, killing him. Aiden and Mia attempt to flee in the car, but they get stuck in the snow. Grace forces the children back into the lodge, where she seats them at the dinner table with their father's corpse and sings, "Nearer, my God, to thee." She affixes duct tape, reading sin to each of their mouths before contemplating the gun. But before she can do anything, police show up. The neighbors had heard the gunshot and were concerned. Grace is soon arrested and charged with murder. What assholes. I can imagine myself losing my mind thinking that I was in the afterlife with these asshole children.
That sounds like some South Park shit right there. Okay, so my even shorter story, because, yeah. So what's Christmas without a little murder? A girl named Juliet is home alone, and she lives with her single mother, who's a nurse taking the night shift. Juliet just finished decorating the Christmas tree when there's a scratching at the door of her apartment. When she looks through the peephole, she sees a man dressed as a dirty Santa Claus suit. "It's Santa Claus," she says. Juliet may be only 11 years old, but she's not an idiot. She refuses to open the door and threatens to call the police when he doesn't leave. His solution to this little dilemma, an axe. Julia hides in the closet while he busts down the door. When he finds her, she manages to stab him in the eye with a coat hanger.
Oh my God.
It all goes downhill from there. Juliet's mom finally gets home around midnight. She finds the door busted in and the Christmas tree decorated with bits of Julia.
It took me longer than a second to process that. Oh my gosh, that's awful. I hope that one isn't true.
Well,
Oh, so we have told four tales, and we'll give you all a second to think which ones you think are true, which ones you think are fake. And I think that why don't we go in the order that we told them, starting with mine and then moving on. So, did a father suddenly massacre his whole family with the exception of his oldest son without warning? The story of the Lawson family tragedy is true. Charlie Lawson and his family are real people that met their fate on Christmas Day in 1929. And I wish that one wasn't true. It's insane. And nobody knows why he spared his oldest son who he sent to town. Maybe it was just like a lapse in his thought process, but he was the only one to survive. And I have no idea who took him in or helped him since his entire family was murdered.
I wonder if it's one of those things where his son went into town and then took like way longer than what his dad expected him to. His dad's just
Yes.
like, "F it. I've got to finish this up. I've got to go." So, my story is also true. It's based on a real life event that's been dubbed the Covina Massacre, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, California. And on the Christmas of 2008, around 11:30 p.m., a man dressed as Santa, named Bruce Pardo, made a special visit to the home of his ex-wife and her parents, where she had been living since the beginning of the divorce. And it was mostly because Bruce knew how much her family valued Christmas and how he kind of figured everybody would be there for this Christmas celebration. So he went to the house with a package that was gift wrapped up, knocked on the door, and an 8-year-old named Katrina opened the door, and he did shoot her in the face. Miraculously, she did survive because when he shot her, it just grazed her cheek, and I guess that she fell to the ground and played dead. But unfortunately, he was able to gun down three other people, which would be his ex-wife, Sylvia Pardo, her mother, which is Alicia, and her father, which is Joseph. So he went on this rampage, shooting basically anybody that got in his path. And as he was going through, after he finished shooting, I guess he must have run out of ammo, didn't feel like reloading or whatever. But he bust open the package that he had, which was a homemade flamethrower that was full of jet fuel
Oh
or
my
racing
gosh.
fuel. I wasn't really clear on that. I've heard it said both ways. But he basically doused as much of the house as he could in this fuel, set it ablaze, and the flames were going like 50 or 40 or 50 feet into the air. It was a massive fire. It took almost 80 firefighters to put the flames out. And in total, nine family members ended up losing their life that night. And that was out of 25 people that were there at this Christmas party. The other people that died were Charles Ortaga, which was a brother-in-law. He was 49. Cherry Ortaga, which was a sister-in-law. She was 45. James Ortaga, which was 51. He was a brother-in-law. Teresa Ortaga, which was 52. Alicia Ortaga Ortez, which was a sister-in-law. She was 46. And Michael Andre Ortez, which was 17. He actually was up playing video games on a computer, and they're guessing that an explosion killed him. He was the youngest person that died that evening. But it's just wild because they don't think that he went there with the intention of murdering as many of this family as he could, but they're thinking that he had planned on trying to run away to Canada when he was done. But because when he put out all of this fuel, he accidentally set himself on fire
Oh my
and
gosh.
had second or third degree burns over a lot of his body. And he fled from the scene, made it to his brother's house, which is about 30 minutes away from where this massacre was. And he ended up killing himself in his brother's home. So not only is he ruining like one family, he is just going all out and murdering and ruining as many people's lives as he possibly can. But he had $17,000 in cash strapped to his body with a girdle and plastic wrap, which was also partially melted to his body, along with parts of the Santa suit.
Why would he strap that to his body?
Well, they're thinking that, well, here's the thing. He purchased a airplane ticket through Air Canada to make it look like once he was done with this massacre, he was going to hop in a plane and go to Canada. But he also rented a car, so they're not really sure if he was trying to use the car to get away or to fly and get away or go to a friend's house. But he had all of this cash because he was going to try to make himself disappear, which didn't exactly work out for him because he burned himself so severely.
That's crazy and really sad.
Yeah.
All right, so we've had two truths. Let's see what's next. Did a soon-to-be mother-in-law descend into madness after her fiancé's children trick her into thinking she was in purgatory? This story is fake. It's the plot to a 2019 movie, The Lodge, with a bit of added flair at the end. She didn't like actually get apprehended by the police, but I thought it made the story sound more believable that there was like a finite end to it, so I added that part on. But it's like a pretty entertaining movie if you ever get the chance to watch it. I don't know, have you seen it before, Amber?
You know, here's the thing, is that when you started describing this, I was like, okay, this sounds like a movie, but I can't tell if it's from The Lodge, but you said that at the beginning. I was like, there's no way she would say that at the beginning. Or if it was from what was it, the Paranormal Activity where they go into Amish country? Because it kind of sounded like that, but I have not watched that one yet. So I don't know.
I didn't mean to say the name of the movie at the beginning. It just kind of happened and I'm going to leave it in. I don't care. Yeah, that movie was about some badass kids who mess with the wrong girl. Just an awful example of when gaslighting goes wrong.
Maybe it's like to teach people not to gaslight other people. This is what will happen.
This is how this could go deathly wrong. Because now they have no parents. Their mom is gone. She shot their dad. Like, yeah.
That's just wild. Okay, so my last story about Juliet was definitely something that was made up. I tried to find any information. I just found this one little story on a random website and it just sounds like a creepypasta, but I could not find any information about this being a movie or a real life story or anything else like it. But
I really hope that that is not true. It can't be true.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to go find like little baby doll body parts to hang up on the Christmas tree.
Go from a Harry Potter tree to like a Toy Story tree.
A Sid tree. Oh man, that's terrible.
Yay. But that was fun. I want to do it again.
I'll have to find some new stories.
Yeah.
I found some interesting tells that we can talk about maybe next time.
Well, that is all we have for you today. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Cursed Cafe and Twitter at The Cursed Cafe Pod, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're so inclined. We hope you enjoyed and thank you for joining us here at The Cursed Cafe Podcast. This is V.
And this is Burr.
Signing off.
Oh, wait. We forgot to tell them. We got a P.O. box.
Oh, yeah. Good thing we didn't say bye. Yay. We're going to give you our P.O. box number. We have it in the description of our podcast episodes now. But if you feel like sending us something nice and not weird, please.
No baby doll body parts. No actual body parts. Please. Yes.
Nothing strange that would hurt us or freak us out, please. I always get weird when I think about people who open up P.O. boxes, and I know obviously they don't have their real address, but who cares? Like, if someone sends you something weird, they send you something weird. So please don't do that. Only nice things.
We will definitely put anything that you send us that is reasonable on our Instagram to share it with everybody. But like I said, it has to be reasonable.
Yes. Yes. We're going to just blatantly ignore anything that's strange, like the bad kind of strange. So you won't get any attention from it either.
Yeah. We like strange, but there's a fine line. Would you send it to your mother? If not.
Well, would you send it to your sister?
Okay. Thanks everybody for joining us today. We hope you have a great week and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.